giant mud of a day. Run, hey, giant mud of a day. Taruni mandala mahite, Ula taruni mandala mahite. Hey, jaya jaya Vardana Veshe, on the scooter brinda, Ineshe. Damodaru Rati Vardana Veshe, on the scooter brinda, Ineshe. Rat, hey, Jaya Jaya Mada Vandai. Vishabhanudhati Navashashilege Ladita Saki Guna Ramitabhishake Vishabhanudhati Navashashilege Ladita Saki Guna Ramitabhishake Rad hey jaya jaya madhava jaya jaya Rad hey jaya jaya madhava jaya jaya Karuna guru mai karuna bharati Sanaka sanatana vanita charite Karuna Bharati Sanaka Sanatana Vanita Charite Rat Hey Jaya Jaya Madhava Jaya Day Rat Hey Jaya Jaya Madhava Jaya Taruni mandala bhajate Taruni mandala bhajate Raj, hey, jaya, jaya, madhava jayate Raj, hey, jaya, jaya, madhava Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvati Kacharya also tell her such as she Shiman His Divine Grace Abhaya Chalanada Bhaktivedanta Gosami Srila Prabhupad Kijai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupad Kijai Anandakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Kijai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai Param Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindigajai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Sai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturadam Kijai. Check out this Sami Kijai. Yamunamaye Kijai. Shimari Lassi Devi Kijai. Samavita Bhakta. Vrinda Kijai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nama Om Vishnu Pradaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Dinamini Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarini Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Let's read the translation. O Radha, all glories unto you, all glories unto you, beloved of Madhava, object of worship for all the young girls of Gokula. You dress yourself in such a way as to increase Lord Damodar's love and attachment for you. You are the controller of Vrindavan, the pleasure groves of Lord Hari. You are a new moon arisen from the ocean of King Vrishabhanu. You are the friend of Lalita, and your wonderful qualities, friendliness, kindness, and faithfulness to Krishna, endear you to Vishakha. You are an ocean of compassion, and your divine characteristics are described by the four Kumaras, Sanaka, Sanatan, Sananda, and Sanat Kumar. O Radha, please be merciful. To me, Srila Rupa Goswami Ki Jai. So we're going to continue with our study of the Sri Isopanishad, which is a very philosophical work. We're on the 11th text of the Sri Isopanishad, which is actually the 12th text, anyway, because there's an introductory text first, which is Om Purnamada, Purnamida, etc. So let's go and share the screen after we offer our respects to Prabhupada, Om Gana, Tivadanda Shah, Gananjana, Shilakaya, Chakshur, Unmiritam, Yena, Tasmai, Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Okay, so first we're going to share the screen that has, hopefully, the actual verse, and we'll read the verse again and then go to the purport where we left off. So mantra 11, and as I described before, it's very interesting how in mantra 11 we actually see in the Sanskrit that it's good to cultivate avidya for the purpose of serving Krishna, which is called yukta vairagya. And so let's look at that verse again. Vijam cha vijam cha yas tadvedo bayam saha avijyamrityum tirtva vijayamritang achnute. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So here it's the process of nescience. Not that you're in nescience, but the different processes of dealing with nescience in the material world. And as we described previously, Prabhupada was quite daksha or expert in dealing with this material world. I was just listening to a memory, and Prabhupada said in the memory, to his devotee, that a sannyasi should be like him. In the morning you give class, in the afternoon you go to the bank, you cook, you do the needful. In order to do the needful in this world, you have to know how to use this world. Prabhupada was so expert. He understood, let's give an example about this. He understood how to secure the temple in Juhu, that's Mumbai nowadays. How did he do this? It was all sorts of political machinations and financial machinations, not imaginations, machinations, it means adjustments and things like that. And because he was dealing with a lot of opposition, so he had to understand many things.
And in addition, Prabhupada said that we should study Chanaka's shlokas, which deal with the material world. Chanaka was not a pure devotee, but he wrote these different shlokas about how to deal with the material world. Incidentally, the Mahabharata, we find Grandfather Bhishma instructing Yudhisthira, when Grandfather Bhishma is on the bed of arrows getting ready to leave the planet, instructing Yudhisthira how to be a king, which is all material knowledge, because in the spiritual world you don't need that knowledge, because everything's spontaneous. So we need knowledge, you know, how to cook. You know, Prabhupada instructed devotees how to cook. You know, intelligence. So anyway, so I just wanted to reiterate that point which we had made yesterday. So let's continue with the purport. We're sort of in the middle of the purport, towards the middle end of the purport. Okay, we'll stop sharing this particular screen, and then we'll go to where we are in the purport, which is another screen. Here we go. Okay, let me just... I'd like to put the chat window by the side in case someone just, like, dies during the class. So they could say they're dying or something like that. You know, if there's some message like, someone can't hear me, or the volume's too low. It's not low now, I can see that. Therefore, the culture of vidya, or transcendental knowledge, is essential for the human being, because avidya without vidya is useless. And vidya without avidya means you're also going to be useless in this material world, unless you're a babaji. Unless you're like an avatutu, just lies in the ground and just waits for everything to come to you. And most of us can't do that. Sense enjoyment in the diseased material condition must be restricted as far as possible. That doesn't mean completely. It means as far as possible. What does it mean, as far as possible? Maintaining your sanity. Because if you restrict your sense gratification too much, you either be sick physically, or your mind will go wild, and you'll become unsteady, and you'll become crazy or something like that. So everybody needs a certain amount of sense grad. Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said it's like a vegetable, that you need a little salt or something to flavor it. I mean, I don't use salt, at least sodium chloride, but I use something else. You need something to flavor it so it's tasty. Otherwise, you'll stop eating. If it's not tasty, you'll stop eating. You won't have a desire to eat. So unrestricted sense enjoyment in this bodily condition is the path of ignorance and death. The living entities are not without spiritual senses. Every living being in his original spiritual form has all the senses which are now materially manifested being covered by the material body and mind. Another example Prabhupada gave is that we have spiritual senses and they're covered by the material body and the mind in the same way that we have a hand, we put a glove on it. And when you have the glove on it, you can't really touch things that well or feel things that well. Someone asked, what's the problem with salt? I'll tell you later, privately. There's no problem. Problem for me with salt. Anyway, I'll explain later about health, and this is not appropriate to freak everyone out about salt. The activities of the materials, I know in Fiji, they use so much salt that I call it a salt subji. In other words, they put some vegetables in the salt preparation. And most devotees, pretty much akin to that. Anyway, let's go on. The activities of the material senses are perverted reflections of the activities of the original spiritual senses. Another question that arises, how do we know how much sense gratification we need? Oh my God. How do you know? Well, there are several ways that you know. First of all, you need a certain amount so your mind is peaceful, so you have good sadhana. You maximize your sadhana. You maximize your preaching. You maximize your service to Krishna. So if you eat more, the service, sadhana, preaching goes down. And if you eat less, the service, sadhana, preaching goes down. So one should not eat too much. Mityahara viharasha. One should be moderate. And so everybody knows. You could just experiment. Try eating more. Service goes down. Or service increases. Then you need to eat that much more. You know, I know sometimes I would eat so little that I was so weak I didn't have any energy to do anything. I was just thinking, oh, I am so austere. Prideful of my austerity. So you got to really figure that out. And then you get to take the help of others. And as far as eating, you can consult the Ayurvedas about taking water with meal or after, before the meal, etc. like that, filling the stomach up a certain percentage. There's ways to deal with it. And you also need to see if you're gaining weight. In this, his disease condition, the spirit soul engages in material activities under the material covering. Real sense enjoyment is possible only when the disease of materialism is removed. So in the spiritual world, or in relationship to Krishna, there's real sense enjoyment. It's kevala nanda kanda. It's unlimited. All the time, 24 hours a day. It's not duality of sukha and dukkha. You don't need to be miserable to be happy spiritually. You can just be happy. I remember before I joined the movement, or when I joined the movement, I said to my mother, Mataji, in Krishna consciousness, you can always be happy. And she said, that's not normal. You need to be miserable too, so you can be happy in comparison to the misery. And she was speaking the truth, materially. In the material world, you need to have some pain or imbalance, and then the happiness comes. You need to be hungry in order to enjoy eating, right? So we say to people sometimes, if someone tries to feed us food, and we know there's a big feast coming, we'll just say what? Don't want to spoil my appetite. Because I can enjoy later on. I won't be able to enjoy if I eat now. So you're planning out for future sense enjoyment. That's the material world. But in Krishna consciousness, you can partake of spiritual enjoyment, and it doesn't spoil it for later on, 2 hours from then. You can have it 24 hours a day. In our pure spiritual form, free from all material contamination, real enjoyment of the senses is possible. A patient must regain his health before he can truly enjoy sense pleasure again. And that reminds me of an example Prabhupada gave of a patient. Sometimes a patient may be so sick, he just may be thinking, oh, end it all off. Get rid of that sense that's causing me pain. But the idea is not to get rid of it. I mean, probably use the example of the eye. The eye may be causing him pain. So the idea is not to get rid of the eye, but to cure the pain so you can again use it. Thus, the aim of human life should not be to enjoy perverted sense enjoyment, but to cure the material disease. Aggravation of the material disease is no sign of knowledge, but a sign of avidya or ignorance. That means accepting more than you actually need. For good health, a person should not increase his fever from 105 degrees to 107, but to reduce his temperature to the normal 98.6, that's Fahrenheit, for those of you who don't know. Of course, those of you who are in Australia and New Zealand are thinking 98.6, that's almost boiling. Because when you're talking about centigrade, 100 degrees is boiling, zero is freezing, so in Fahrenheit, 212 degrees is boiling, and 32 degrees is freezing. So Prabhupada here is speaking in terms of Fahrenheit, 98.6. That should be the aim of human life. The modern trend of material civilization is to increase the temperature of the feverish material condition, which has reached the point of 107 degrees in the form of atomic energy. Now, the reason Prabhupada is talking about 107 degrees, that's... you're dying, Prabhu. if you have 170 degrees, you better call the funeral home. You better reserve a coffin for yourself or reserve the crematorium or something like that. Just give them a call and say, I'm coming there soon. If you've got 170 degrees, you won't be able to give them a call. Meanwhile, the foolish politicians are crying that at any moment the world may go to hell. It's already in hell. That is a result of the advancement of material knowledge and the neglect of the most important part of life, the culture of spiritual knowledge. Shri Upanishad herein warns that we must not follow this dangerous path leading to death. On the contrary, we must develop the culture of spiritual knowledge so that we may become completely free from the cruel hands of death. Phew. This does not mean that all activities for the maintenance of the body should be stopped. There's no question of stopping activities, just as there's no question of wiping out one's temperature altogether when trying to recover from a disease. To make the best use of a bad bargain is the appropriate expression. The culture of spiritual knowledge necessitates the help of the body and mind. Therefore, maintenance of the body and mind is required if we are to reach the goal. The normal temperature should be maintained at 98.6 degrees, and the great sages and saints of India have attempted to do this by a balanced program. Here's where Prabhupada talks about what I mentioned the verses about. By a balanced program of spiritual and material knowledge. Got it? And that's what that verse is about. Prabhupada gets to it sort of at the end of the purport. They never allow the misuse of human intelligence for disease sense gratification. Human activities, diseased by a tendency towards sense gratification, have been regulated in the Vedas under the principles of salvation. You know, regulation. You know, eating, sleeping, mating, defending is regulated. What do you mean, regulated? Like eating, you eat prasadam. Don't overeat, don't undereat, but eat food offered to Krishna. Eating, sleeping, you sleep enough. So you have the energy to serve Krishna, not too much, not too little. You mate to produce Krishna-conscious children, otherwise mating takes you away from Krishna consciousness. Yep. And defending, you defend Krishna if someone criticizes Krishna, or you defend the devotees, or you defend your family when necessary. But it's not that you have to become a boxer. A boxer or football player. Of course, if you do that, you should give your earnings to Krishna. Football players make more money than doctors nowadays. I mean, professional football players. But then they get their brains destroyed, too. Recently, there was a person in sports who his heart stopped because while he was playing the game, what happened? At a certain point when his heart was beating, he had a blow to his body. And when the body gets hit at a certain point during the rhythm of the heart, because the heart's rhythm is controlled by what? Electrical impulses, electrochemical impulses in the body. And so if you get a strike on your heart region during that time, bingo, your heart stops. Whew, very dangerous. So you're playing sports, just be careful. The system employs religion, and so many people die. I was just reading about that. So many people die each year. Children, even children, you know, have good hearts. They die. Whew. This system employs religion, economic development, sense gratification, salvation. But at the present moment, people have no interest in religion or salvation. So in other words, the Vedic system is dharma, artha, kama, moksha, and then panchama, purusharta, devotional service. So the Vedic system is to gradually elevate you. Yes, you're religious, you know, you have some religious rituals, and you may be doing it for economic development or sense gratification, but then you get frustrated and then you take up devotional service. But people don't get frustrated now because there's so much in ignorance. you know, at least if someone's impassioned, they get frustrated after a while. Like, happiness in the mode of passion is what? It's like nectar in the beginning and poison at the end. But happiness in the mode of ignorance is just like misery from the beginning to the end. So it's just blah, blah. You're just a big blah, blob. They have only one aim in life, sense gratification, and in order to achieve this end, they make plans for economic development. That means money, making money. Misguided men think that religion should be maintained because it contributes to economic development, which is required for sense gratification. It's like prosperity gospel. In America, we have this thing called prosperity gospel. What is that? That if you worship God, you'll become prosperous and rich. And so you'll see these great preachers, I don't think they're great, but anyway, the big preachers, they get up on the stage and they say, you know, I'm worshiping God, and look how well I'm doing. God has blessed me. And then they bring out their wife, who happens to be blonde hair and blue eyes, you know, a trophy wife, as they say. And they say, look, I worship God. Look what I got, buddy. Eat your heart out. So you should worship God, or at least send your donations to 1-800-WORSHIP-1234. Anyway, so thus, in order to guarantee further sense gratification after death in heaven, there's some system of religious observance. But this is not the purpose of religion. The purpose of religion is to love God. The path of religion is actually meant for self-realization, and economic development is required just to maintain the body in a sound, healthy condition. In other words, when you put petrol in the car, you just fill it up to the top of the tank. Now, if you keep filling or keep pouring the petrol into the car, guess what's going to happen, especially if there's a fire around there. Or if you start the engine, you'll have an explosion. So if you keep putting sense gratification into this body or mind, then after a while you get this big explosion and you get an ignorance. A man should lead a healthy life with a sound mind just to realize vidya, true knowledge, which is the aim of human life. This life is not meant for working like an ass or for cultivating a vidya for sense gratification. We cultivate a vidya to please Krishna. The path of vidya is most perfectly presented in Srimad Bhagavatam, which directs the human being to utilize his life to inquire into the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is realized step by step as Brahman, Paramatma, and finally Bhagavan, the Personality of Godhead. The Absolute Truth is realized by the broad-minded man who has attained knowledge and detachment by following the 18 principles of the Bhagavad Gita as described in the purport to Mantra 10. The central purpose of these 18 principles is the attainment of transcendental devotional service to the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, all classes of men are encouraged to learn the art of devotional service to the Lord. Okay. Let me read those 18 principles again. Hold on a second. I think I can find them pretty quickly. Here we go. Here's the 18 principles. One should be a perfect gentleman and respect others. Two, one should not pose himself as a religionist simply for name and fame. One should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body, mind, or words. Four, one should learn forbearance, that means tolerance, even in the face of provocation and agitation from others. Five, one should learn to avoid duplicity. That means lying or hiding things, saying one thing to one person but meaning another thing, or saying one thing to one person, another thing to another person for political purposes. One should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to the stage of spiritual realization. Next one is, in order to approach the platform of self-realization, one must follow the regulative principles. Hare Krishna. Must. That's imperative. So one must be fixed in the tenets of the revealed scripture. In other words, you need to know the Siddhanta, you need to know the Tattva, the Bhavas, and basic knowledge. Not that you need to memorize millions of verses, but the tenets, the basic principles. One should be completely, nine, one should completely refrain from practices which are detrimental to the interest of self-realization. 10, one should not accept more than he requires for the maintenance of the body. We talked about that in today's class. 11, one should not falsely identify himself with a gross material body. In other words, I'm a soul. Nor should one consider those who are related to his body to be his own. My family. Actually, as far as my family is concerned, everyone's dead, except for the person who considers himself to be my brother. One should remember that as long as he's a material body, he must face the miseries of repeated birth, death, disease, and old age. Next one is one should not be attached to more than the necessities of life required for spiritual advancement. 14, one should not be more attached to wife, children, and home than the revealed scriptures ordain. As I mentioned before, one is attached to them to try to bring them to Krishna consciousness. One should not be happy or distressed over desirables and undesirables, knowing that such feelings are created by the mind. One should become an unalloyed devotee of Krishna. One should develop a liking for residence in a secluded place that's calm and quiet, and should avoid places where non-devotees congregate. And finally, 18, one should become a scientist or a philosopher and conduct research into spiritual knowledge, realizing that spiritual knowledge is eternal and material knowledge is what? Temporary. So that's really important for us to understand. Okay, going back to where we left off. The guaranteed path to the aim of vidya is described by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which we have presented in English as the Nectar Devotion. The culture of vidya, knowledge, is summarized in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.14 in the following words. Tasmad ekena manasa bhagavan satvatam vati shrutavya kirtitavyascha jaya pujas chadechida. Therefore, with one pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. One pointed attention, ekeha kurunandana. Just like, yes. One-pointed. And everything connected to that. One has to be practical, not foolish. Unless religion, economic development, and sense gratification aim towards the attainment of devotional service to the Lord, they are all simply different forms of nescience, as Sri Upanishad indicates in the following mantras. So in other words, everything in this world, when it's dedicated, when you dedicate material knowledge to Krishna's service, is no longer nescience, whereas previously it was nescience. Okay, moving on. So, where's my pen? I want to mark these down. So today we did. Today we did 11, second part of 11b. Yesterday we did 11A, and we're moving on to 12, which we probably won't finish. So let's read mantra 12. Annam tama pravishanti ye sambhutim upasate tato bhuyak ivate tamo yahu sambhutyang rataha. Annam, ignorance. Tamaha, darkness. Pravishanti, enter into. Yea, those who? Asambhutim, demigods. Upasate, worship. Tataha, than that. Uya, still more. Iva, like that. Te, those. Tamaha, darkness. Yea, who? U, also. Sambhutyang, in the absolute Rataha engaged. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Pretty heavy. And still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. So, even darker than the darkest region of ignorance is the place where the worshippers of the impersonal absolute go. Why? Because the worshippers of the impersonal absolute decry the personality, criticize the personality of Godhead, commit offenses, so their stay in ignorance is longer than those who worship the demigods. At least those who worship the demigods, what? They accept something superior to themselves. And they accept some personality superior. But of course, they are also committing offenses because Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudradi Daivata Samitpani Samitpani Viksheta Sapashandi Pashandi Pavetrupam. Because if they're considering others, demigods, to be equal to the Supreme Lord, they are Pashandis, rejects, atheists. So they're both offenders. But those who think that the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal, the ultimate understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal, that's the lowest. And you can't go any lower than that. Better, you're an innocent demon. Innocent demon. That's a nice contradiction. But better you're a sense gratifier. Yeah. Better to be a sense gratifier. The Sanskrit word asambhuti refers to those who have no independent existence. Sambhuti is the absolute personality of Godhead, who is absolutely independent of everything. We talked about this before. He's swarat. That means independent. Doesn't need anyone else. Each one of us needs so many things, people, arrangements, in order to be happy or just exist. We're dependent on the air, we're dependent on what demigods to supply different ingredients in this material nature. We're dependent on our parents when we're little, cute little babies. We're dependent on the electricity, you know, so many things we're dependent on. But Krishna doesn't need anything. He's completely independent. He's swarat. He's optikama. Whatever he wants, he gets. You know, I don't need you, Krishna is thinking. But he loves us. And because he loves us, he wants us. That's real love. In this material world, we say that we love someone because what they do for us. You know, they give us sense gratification. You know, and just like, of course, this is a symptom of Kali Yuga. In the male-female relationships, when there's some trouble in the sex life, it breaks up in Kali Yuga. Because that's why they got married in the first place. Or there's some trouble in sense gratification, or there's some trouble, anyway, with our friends. You know, we hate people, we love people based upon what they do for us, either subtly or grossly. That's our relationships. So let's hear what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, text 2. The Absolute Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna states, Name vidu suragana prabhavam na maharshiyaha amadiri devanam maharshinam cha Saravasha. Neither of the hosts of the demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulence, for in every respect I am the source of the demigods and sages. So the demigods, they just work for Krishna. And if you worship them independently, you're a criminal. You're bribing. Just like, I mean, I give this example many times. Like in India, if you were pulled over for a ticket, which has happened to me, then you just simply smile at the police and give them 100 rupees. And then the policeman says, oh, thank you very much. So that's bribery. It's illegal, but what can you do? It's, of course, now it's becoming more controlled. One time we were going on a tour in South India, and we had this bus. We wanted to take the bus into an area where buses were not permitted. This was in, Jagannath Puri. Jagannath Puri. So I just told the devotee, fortunately I had devotees with me from India, or else they would have charged us more, to slip the police 100 rupees. And it's illegal, but, you know, that's what goes on. But when I got pulled over for a traffic ticket here, you know, for speeding, over a year ago, actually, at this point, I never thought of offering him money, because I would have gone to jail. Because I would have been detected, because I think in most instances, they're honest. So in the same way, with the demigods, you worship the demigods without worshiping Krishna, you're detected. Oh, you rascal. You're trying to bribe. Aviti Purvakam. You're trying to bribe. Okay, ignorance for you, baby. Thus, Krishna is the origin of the powers delegated to demigods, great sages, and mystics. Although they are endowed with great powers, these powers are limited, and thus it is very difficult for them to know how Krishna himself appears by his own internal potency in the form of a man. You know, Avijananti Mahamudha. People think he is an ordinary person, a man, or a material body. They are asses. That's Krishna's words. Don't blame me. Many philosophers and great rishis or mystics try to distinguish the absolute from the relative by their tiny brain power. In other words, they're trying to figure out what is the absolute truth, because they see things in this world are relative. You know, there's relative beauty, there's relative sense perception, there's all sorts of relative, you know, dualities, trialities, quaturalities. Everything's relative to something else. Just like, I'm taller than someone, and someone is taller than me, and someone is taller than him. So it's all relative. I can say, well, I'm taller, because it's a relative thing. So when you try to understand the absolute, who's the tallest, you can't figure that out by your tiny brain power. But that's what's done by many people. They try to figure it out, and then they just travel at the speed of the mind for unlimited time, and they still don't reach the end of the material creation. This can only help them reach the negative conception of the absolute truth without realizing any positive trace of the absolute truth. So in other words, the absolute truth is not this, called neti neti, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, and then you end up with shunya. The absolute truth is nothing, zero, zilch. Definition of the absolute by negation is not complete. In other words, you can't tell something, you can't understand the nature of something by understanding what it's not. For example, the word Vaikuntha, although it refers to the spiritual planets, is actually a definition by negation. Because Vaikuntha means without anxiety. Kuntha means anxiety, without anxiety. Okay. Without anxiety. So what happens in the place without anxiety? I don't know. Of course, I do know. So, but that's a negative definition. You're not told. But when you hear the word Goloka, you actually understand. Planet of the cows, it's positive. Such negative definitions lead one to create a concept of one's own, and thus one imagines that the absolute must be formless and without qualities. You know, so you're negating the qualities that you perceive in this world, and therefore you think the absolute, because all the qualities in this world are relative, are causes of difficulty, pain, disturbance, anxiety, and so the absolute must not have those qualities because those qualities are bad in this world. But you don't understand that this world's a reflection of the spiritual world. The reflection, everything's bad. And in the spiritual world, everything is nice. Such negative qualities are simply the reversal of the relative material qualities, and therefore are also relative. Let me explain that. So if you try to negate everything in this world, thinking the absolute truth is just a negation, that negation is also relative. It's not absolute because it's based upon what it's, you're negating. Does that make sense? Because it's relative to those things which you use, which you are trying to negate. By conceiving of the absolute in this way, one can at the utmost reach the impersonal effulgence of God known as Brahman. That means the light. I see the light. But one cannot make further progress to Bhagawan, the personality of Godhead. So, we will end here. And we will take some questions. Hold on a second. We're stopping the sharing. And let me hold on. Mute. Allow you to unmute yourselves. And so now you have an option of unmuting yourselves or raising your hand and being called upon, or typing in the chat window. So who has a question for us? A lot of philosophy today. There must be a question. Oh, Mr. Govinda again. Okay.
Please
ask Brian Govinda, what's the question?
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to Prabhupada.
Maharaj, you just read in the beginning that essence of all Vedic literature is to distinguish me from Maya. And then you read, by considering illusory energy, one comes to the platform of understanding me. So then our Prayojan Acharya is Raghunath Das Goswami.
Yeah.
I don't see him engaging Maya. He's like avoiding. He's the Acharya of ultimate goal of our life.
Yeah, but I see him engaging the material energy.
Can you please give some illumination? Please?
Well, how did he excavate Radhakund? You know the story? You know the story about the gentleman who was very rich and he was in Bhadarik Ashram?
Yes.
And he was going to give all his money at Bhadarik Ashram, and then he had a message from Bhadarayani that actually you should take your money and give it to Raghunath Das Goswami to excavate Radhakund.
I see.
So, you know, he used the material energy. I mean, his mission was to show the epitome or the topmost aspect of renunciation. But he was certainly engaged in using Krishna's material energy in Krishna's service. Mm-hmm. He didn't sign any of the legal papers for Radhakund because he was supposed to show renunciation. He had Jiva Goswami sign all those legal papers. But he certainly arranged for everything in Radhakund, for the excavation and for the care of the Vaishnavas there. I mean, yeah, he was sitting around, and he also wrote. I mean, writing and knowledge of Sanskrit, which he wrote in, is actually knowledge in the material world. So he used that knowledge. You know, we know how to read.
That's
one sense, that's material knowledge. It could be used to read some not mundane novel. It could be used to read the Vedic literatures. So, I mean, he obviously had less engagement in Yukta Vairagya than most people. But Prabhupada's example, Prabhupada is our Acharya. I mean, of course, Raghunath Das Goswami is the Acharya of Prayojana. I mean, how many of us are out on the platform of Raghunath Das Goswami? I haven't found too many people. So, therefore, and even if we were, we follow a Prabhupada as our practical Acharya. If you want to know how to be Krishna conscious, the perfect example of Bhagavad Gita in action in the modern day is His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada set the example. I mean, Prabhupada was so expert. You know, we want to jump to Raghunath Das Goswami, or the Goswami's, hey Rad, hey Brajadevake, hey Nanda Shuno Kuta. Yeah, you want to run around the Lachua chanting, Radharani Krishna, where are you?
You are hilarious, Maharaj. Thank you.
that would be kind of funny. I mean, can I? Pran Govind is from Alachua, in case some of you don't know. Can you imagine him running around the grounds of New Raman Reiki, which is a temple? I just chanting, Radha, Radha, Krishna, where are you? The devotees would probably want to put him away if he did that. So, I mean, things have to be practical in this world. I mean, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they set an example for us. But also, I mean, Jiva Goswami is extremely practical in dealing with the material world. Rupa Goswami was extremely practical. So many of the Goswamis dealt a lot, you know, temple construction. I mean, like Rupa Goswami, he wasn't planning to do any temple construction, and he just told his Didi, or no, that's Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami just told Madan Mohan, you're just going to have to eat dried bread balls, you know, because I don't have time to construct a temple or get salt, because you asked the question about salt. And if you want to have a temple or get salt, you have to arrange it yourself. But then Krishna sent the money, and so then Sanatan Goswami had to arrange for the construction. He didn't over-endeavor. It says also a sannyasi should not be overly enthusiastic about constructing temples. He could do it if Krishna sends the money, but not that he should go crazy trying to collect money just to build temples. Although Prabhupada did send devotees and sannyasis out to collect money to build his temples in Vrindavan, you know, so Prabhupada was really so practical to build his temples in Vrindavan and in Mayapur. Prabhupada had devotees collecting in the West, had devotees distributing books, you know, so I would just like to follow Prabhupada's example and please Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada wanted more devotees, happier devotees. I mean, that was Prabhupada's mood.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, so let's go on. Here's another question in the chat window. How do you use the family attachment to get them into Krishna consciousness? That's interesting. My son is 13 years old. How can I begin Krishna consciousness with him? One of the things we do is by showing him how Krishna, being Krishna conscious, you're more loving as a mother. Like, I'll give you an example. Prabhupada's sister was married to someone who wasn't Krishna conscious. Prabhupada's sister, of course, Bhishma means sister, younger sister. So anyway, so Prabhupada's sister was married, I guess, to a drunkard or something like that and ate meat. And so she served him nicely, became like a perfect wife, and did her bhakti and everything like that, but didn't tell her husband, that he was in Maya and she didn't care for him because he was just a dog. And eventually he became a devotee. So the point is, we can bring a lot of people to Krishna consciousness with love, care, concern, real love, not just artificial, you know, sentimental goopy love. So that's how. Just be very loving with your son. Show a good example yourself. Don't try to tell him what to do. I mean, there's so many families where the parents try to force their kids to be Krishna conscious. They just say, you know, chant your rounds, or you won't get any prasadam. Chant your rounds nicely, and I'll take you to Disneyland. I'll take you to see Avatar. So anyway, so so So, you know, just be loving, that's all. You know, use attachment parenting. Carry your kid in front of you, you know, in a little strap until he's like 18 years old. Or until your back breaks. One of the two things happens. Either you have severe back pain, or that's why it's important to exercise so you can carry your children around all the time. Anyway, I'm just joking, of course. I'm just exaggerating things. Okay, I think that's it. That's all we have time for tonight. Thank you very much, and we will continue tomorrow. Tomorrow I am not giving the Sunday Feast Program lecture, whatever it's called. I will be able to give the regular reading. Isn't that ecstatic? We have a guest here giving a Sunday Feast lecture, so So we'll be same time, same station tomorrow, which is Sunday here, and Monday for those of you in the South Pacific, who are lucky because you're having your summer now, where it's nice and warm, and we are having our winter, where it's nice and cold. So, we'll see everybody later. All glories to Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.